A specter is haunting the world.
The specter of communism.
Greetings, comrades and listeners. This is Comrade Michael again in today's episode of The Spectre, and we will be analyzing the Mediterranean island country of Cyprus. Cyprus is often overlooked in the U.S. educational system. In my experience, it was always briefly mentioned when talking about the ancient Greek world due to its geographic location between the Middle East, Europe, and Egypt. Cyprus also fell under the control of the medieval Christian Crusader Knights during the medieval centuries as they traveled to the Holy Land to conquer the traditional Christian holy sites back from the Muslims. From 1878 to 1960, the British Empire occupied the island and to this day continues to use it as a quote-unquote natural aircraft carrier to carry out its imperialist missions in the area. From 1974 until the present, the northern part of the island has been under the imperialist Turkish control, that is Turkey, as in the member of NATO, Turkey. But what about the Cypriot people's struggle for unification? What about the Cypriot movement for socialism? Apart from playing a lead role in the fight for Cypriot unification, AKEL, the Communist Party in Cyprus, has most recently won a significant and historical election victory with Dimitrios Christofias winning the presidential election in Cyprus back in 2008. Christofias was the first elected communist president in the European Union to date and served from 2008 until 2013. Well, today we are joined by a special guest, Vera Polikaku, from the Progressive Party of Working People, known more commonly by the Greek acronym AKEL or AKEL. Comrade Vera currently serves as the head of International Relations Bureau and a member of the party's Central Committee. She was also head of AKEL's delegation to the European Parliament for 11 years, from 2004 to 2015. So welcome, Vera. We are, you know, glad to have you here on the show despite this pandemic, which is plaguing the world at the moment. How are you?
We're okay. Just like everybody on lockdown. And thank you for this invitation. And before saying anything else, I would like on behalf of AKEL to express our sympathy and our solidarity with the people that is suffering also in your country very extensively because of this pandemic.
Yes, well, we appreciate that very much. You know, it's very hard, especially here in New York City where I'm located. And so we appreciate any form of solidarity and support that we can get. But if you could, since, you know, we kind of covered the overall history of Cyprus, how about you tell us a little bit of the history of your party? You know, your party was founded in the midst of the British occupation in 1926, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me just add a few details of information as to the history of the country and it's where it's located, because all this will be very, very important in what we're going to deal with further on about the history of AKEL and how it developed and all that. One thing is that people should know that Cyprus has always been geographically a very strategic point for all these, during all these periods from ancient time to today, because it is located between three continents. We are very, very near Africa, Egypt. We're very near Palestine, Lebanon, Syria. Turkey is just 40 nautical miles from our northern coast, which it occupies. So we are in this very corner of the Mediterranean, Eastern Mediterranean. So we are part of what is happening in our region, in the Middle East, all through the history, not just now. But we're considered to be part of Europe. And the thing is that Cyprus, apart from the ancient times, has never been independent as such. that was always part of like a colony of someone or occupied by someone or people building here their cities like the Greeks in ancient time and all that. And then we had a very long time under the Ottoman Empire from 1571 to 1878, as you said. And that explains why in Cyprus there are also Turkish Cypriots living. And we have these communities, like we have the Greek Cypriot community that speaks Greek, and it makes nearly 80% of the population, the Turkish Cypriots, like 18%. But then we have also three religious minorities, as they're called, the Maronites, who came from Lebanon about 200 years ago and speak their own language of Arabic. We have Latins who remain here since the Crusaders and the French kings and all that, and they are Catholic. It's a very small group. And we have the Armenians who came in Cyprus, to Cyprus after the Armenian genocide at the beginning of the 20th century. And it's quite a sizable community in Cyprus. And another element, which is, I think, important for everybody to understand, that in Cyprus, we are less than 1 million people. Of course, there are Cypriots spread all over the world, also in the US, a lot of Cypriots. But in Cyprus, we are less than 1 million. So that when we talk about anything, you should take this into account. That is, the proportions are different. So we might be important geographically, but we are small and we don't possess that economic might that other countries might have.
Yes, and I think that's very important, you know, talking about all these different, you know, ethnic minorities, because, you know, in terms of ethnicity, you know, ethnic diversity, you also have religious diversity. You have the Turkish Muslims in the north, and then you have the Greek Cypriots, who tend to be Orthodox Christians, of course, Maronites, Catholics, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is a very diverse country, although it is small and does have a small population. Yeah. And so, you know, when we get to the unification of Cyprus, this will also play a special role in, you know, why it is so difficult.
Exactly.
To unify the country, of course.
Yeah.
And this is very important going forward, since, you know, as we addressed, a lot of people, not just here in the United States, but around the world, tend to overlook Cyprus. They tend to think of it as like an extension of Greece, or, you know, just a medieval crusader kingdom with nice castles. This is very important going forward. Yes.
There's a lot more going on here than that. But yes, a lot of people think, you know, Cyprus is called the island of love because Aphrodite, the Greek goddess of love, was born in Cyprus out of the foam. And there are a lot of stories, you know, that, you know, turn Cyprus to be the idyllic place, etc. But we have a lot of problems, and that's very important. And thank you for thinking of having this discussion, because it's good for people to know a bit more about the reality here. So we were talking about the formation of Akel, the establishment of Akel. So have in mind that all this was happening when Cyprus was a colony, a British colony. And very, very poor. Proletariat forces, workers, almost zero. Only around the port area of Limassol and some in Famagusta. Most of the people were poor laborers or farmers. This mostly came from the intellectuals that formed the communist nuclei. And in 1926, they found the Communist Party of Cyprus. And Akel is the successor from 1943 onwards. It's the successor, or has the same program, etc., of the Communist Party of Cyprus. So the party is about to turn 95. From August onwards, we will be celebrating the 95th anniversary of the party.
Well, happy early birthday. You know, happy early birthday. We just celebrated our 100th anniversary.
Yes. So it was about, we read that. And yes, congratulations about that. And we're looking forward to have a reciprocate, you know, information on your history for our people to know more. So it's important to say that in the program of the party, it was mentioned that the party is for all Cypriots, irrespective of national origin, religious origin, color, etc. So since that time, the Communist Party, and then AKEL was a party of all Cypriots. And it's the only one. It's the only party so far, 95 years onwards, that has this feature.
Wow.
And this, I think, together, of course, with its ideology, the Marxism, Leninism, etc., made it what it is. AKEL passed through a period of semi-legality, and from 1931 onwards, when there was the harshening of the colonial regime after an uprising in 1931, its leaders were exiled, and then it was banned. And in order to get out of this ban in 1941, AKEL was founded. There was a period from 41 to 43, and 43 the two existed in parallel, and then in 43 the Communist Party dissolved completely within AKEL. But AKEL is its successor. So the Progressive Party of the Working People is not something that we thought during the perestroika, that many parties changed their names, etc. Mm-hmm. We always called our party like that for many, many years before that.
In order to survive, it was a form of survival, really, to be legal and function legally.
Yes, okay. Yes. And to embrace the popular notion that we are for the working people. You know, it was much more understandable to the people as a notion than communism at that time. Yeah, because you have to know that the first university in Cyprus was founded in 1993. So Cypriots had to go abroad to study. So it was also limited up to a point. But, you know, the intelligentsia was not as in other countries.
Of course.
An important point is that in Cyprus, it's the party that formed the unions. During the 30s and then onwards in the 40s, but in the 30s was a time when the unions, mostly of port workers, of construction workers, of shoemakers, which were the main, let's say, crafts that were at the time, were founded. And these later on in the 40s played an immense role. So it's the other way around. It's not like in most European countries where the Socialist Party was founded by the unions, and then the Socialist Party, the Labour Party, might or might not have turned into a Communist Party.
Yes, that's a very unique history, you know, that your party has. And I remember when I was in Cyprus just this past December for the World Federation of Democratic Youth's General Council meeting, we were staying in Larnaca. And I believe we stayed at a hotel or kind of like a resort that's owned or at least controlled by the AKEL Union, correct?
Like it's owned by the Pan-Cyprian Federation of Labor, yes.
Yes,
the left unions, yes.
And even in the city of Larnaca itself, you know, when we would walk around the city, we would see flags, you know, for AKEL and its youth branch, you know, Idong, which we can talk about in a minute. And it was just very interesting to hear people's reaction to hearing that, you know, we were communist or socialist youth organizations. It was a very positive response, unlike what you get a lot of times here in the United States, which is changing. But in Cyprus, it's a very different landscape. And I think that's due to the history that you're describing.
Yeah, because one has to say that any gain that the working people of Cyprus has had, or any victory that the Cypriot people has had, has the mark of AKEL on it. One point that we have to refer into the 30s that has to be mentioned is that being banned underground in Cyprus, it did support AKEL, the Communist Party did support the fight against fascism in Spain, and Cypriots participated in the civil war with the international brigades. Probably they fought along the Abraham Lincoln brigade because they came alongside the British communists and the British brigades.
This is during the Spanish Civil War, correct?
The Spanish, yeah. We had, like, at that time, Cyprus had less than 500,000 population. It was around 400,000. To have 66 Cypriots being there, it's a huge number. And one of the comrades became a commissar and was later on given the Spanish citizenship. He was honored, etc. And 19 of these comrades lost their lives. Among those that fought was our general secretary from 1948 to 88, Ezequias Papayan. So he fought and he was wounded there. So being what it was under colonial rule, etc., it did become a part of the international communist movement and workers' movement. So it did live with the rhythm of what was happening in the world, of course, but under very difficult conditions. And then in the 40s, in 1943, the party called on its members to join the Cypriot Brigade, the Cypriot contingent of the British Army. And a lot of Cypriots fought and lost their lives in the fight in the war, in the Second World War, in the fight against fascism. And that was a very important part of our history and of the development of a lot of comrades and how it became even stronger and much more rooted in the people. So then the British, of course, had offered to give Cyprus its independence at the end of the Second World War, when the war would be won. This never happened. We know of cases of some comrades who were decorated from the British Army, from Britain, from the Empire, for having fought alongside the British, or being part of the British Army, and who later on gave back their medals in protest of that. So in 1948, we have a very big event also in Cyprus that marked the unions, the working class victory or gains, and the fostering of the joint struggle of Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots on a class basis and not ethnic. That was the big strikes of the miners and then the construction workers and others who joined in. But these were huge strikes and very, very important and significant in our history. And it's very important that that was about a year or two ago. We all went, from the unions, from the youth, from the party, we went into the occupied area, Lefka, where was one of these mines that the most epic, let's say, struggle took place. It was the biggest mine. And we did that commemoration together, Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots.
That's really
So it's something that links the two communities to this day.
And in terms of linking the two communities, in particular, you know, the Greek Cypriots and the Turkish Cypriots, did the party at one point, was it active on all of the island? Did it comprise, you know, members of both communities?
Yeah, I mean, we have to say that until 1974, the Turkish invasion and occupation, there was no one zone. I mean, Greek Cypriots, Turkish Cypriots lived scattered all over the island. There was one town and one neighborhood would be Greek Cypriots, the other Turkish Cypriots, villages that would be mixed villages or one around the other. So there was not such thing. And of course, AKEL was active all over the island and in all communities, not just the two main ones, but also in the three minorities, religious minorities. And IKL to this day has members who are Turkish Cypriots in Cyprus and in Britain mainly, where there's a huge Cypriot community. And by the way, unfortunately, by now we have lost about 100 Cypriots in London from COVID because of this irresponsible attitude of the government there.
Yes. Towards immigrants?
I mean, not just towards the immigrants, towards all the population.
Boris Johnson, conservative government.
Johnson. Yeah, I mean, to move on with the history, 1955 then, the so-called armed struggle started against the British. The organization that led this armed struggle excluded the left, the communists, and the Turkish Cypriots from this. IKL had a different attitude. IKL was in favor of a mass political struggle because of the dimensions of the island and the fact that we were not just one community. There were two communities and plus others. And we didn't want the British to use the divide and rule. And we didn't consider that Cyprus was a good place to have an armed struggle. And the mass political struggle that we had started from the late 40s would be the right way to do away with the colonial regime and give Cyprus its independence. But although IKL was excluded by the organizers, the first and only party that was made illegal was IKL. Our comrades, 113 members were imprisoned, taken to camps, etc., including our general secretary at one point. He was not arrested at the beginning, but later on. The youth organization was made illegal, the women's organization, the trade unions were not, because the British, with the labor tradition, never put made illegal the unions. So this period was a very, very difficult period. And it was when the British started to divide the Greek Cypriots from the Turkish Cypriots, which was fostered later on by Turkey, etc. And there was a dark moment also that this organization, EOKA, was killing mostly the left, trade unionists, IKL members, rather than the British. It was, this is one of the very difficult periods when our leadership was wise enough not to allow our members and supporters to move into a counterattack and thus go into a civil war, because that was the aim. So we are very proud of how our leadership helped manage that period. And of course, we honor all the comrades, all the friends, all the unionists, etc., that were assassinated during that period. And that led to Cypriot independence.
In 1950, correct. This is after the 1950s.
59-60, it was the agreements of Zurich and London. That's what they call the Zurich and London agreements, which granted, let's say, Cyprus its independence. But that was a very curtailed independence.
Because, I could imagine, you know, after 10 years of such a, you know, on the brink of civil war and the party being persecuted, kind of like here in our country, you know, our party went through McCarthyism. People were deported, you know, comrades were deported, they were jailed, all of our leadership was in prison or living abroad in exile. And so I think that's something that our parties have in common, you know, going through the 1950s, and that we chose wisely. We chose not to rise up because we wouldn't have survived. And in our case, we were able to thrive throughout the 60s and 70s in the civil rights movement. And your party, like you're saying, it was able to play a role in the struggle for independence and the struggle for an independent country.
Yeah, because we were the only ones, although we had disagreed with these agreements, we were the only party that really believed in the independence of Cyprus. And although we did not support Makarios, the first president, during his the election, we were supporting another candidate. We were the only ones who supported him all through the difficult period.
And Makarios, was a Greek Orthodox priest, correct?
He was a Greek Cypriot. Yeah, he was the Archbishop of Cyprus.
The Archbishop, all right.
Yes, from 48, 49, he became the Archbishop, yes. But Makarios is very well known because together with Fidel Castro, Tito, Nehru, and Nasser, founded the movement, the non-aligned movement, that Cyprus was a very important member of until the time when it joined the EU. But that was a very, very important period, and it's the non-aligned movement that supported Cyprus, the Young Republic, over the most difficult times of its history, from 1960 onwards. So we had, because also today, as I mentioned, Fidel Castro, and because today there is a huge attack against Cuba from the US and this the blockade that is increasing, etc. Cuba was one of the first countries that established diplomatic relations with Cyprus, and is a very was very, very helpful to Cyprus all through the years. Why we were against the disagreed with this the London and Zurich agreement is because it was a curtailed independence, and it was allowing the British to have bases on the island that they maintain until today, and they are called the sovereign British bases. It's about 3% of the territory that they can use of Cyprus. The other treaty was the Treaty of Establishment, and the third one, the Treaty of Guarantees. And this Treaty of Guarantees is something that is a misfortune of Cyprus to this day. But we can come back to it when we will be talking about what kind of solution to the Cyprus problem we want. Unfortunately, this Treaty of Guarantee was used by Turkey in order to invade Cyprus in 1974. We had one critical period that showed that this kind of constitution that was given to Cyprus was a divisive one. It was dividing the Greek Cypriots from the Turkish Cypriots and was not putting together, let's say, the two to foster the common education, common culture, etc., from what it was. It was separated. The education was separate. So marriages were not allowed because you could only have a religious wedding. If you either had to change your religion and change community, or you could not marry. Mm. So there were very few intermarriages. But very, very few. So the British maintained here their bases. And very, very soon in 1963, we had the first intercommunal conflict that led to the first divisions of the population. People were moved from one area to the other to become more like concentrating the population in neighborhoods and small villages, etc. For the Turkish Cypriot, it was more the feeling of security, but they were forced also to do that by TMT, which was the other terrorist organization that was functioning within the Turkish Cypriot community and who assassinated progressive Turkish Cypriot journalists, lawyers, and trade unionists. because the unions were united. I mean, PO, our trade union, was a union of all Cypriots. And then later on, the Turkish Cypriots moved to organize their own unions because it was very, very hard to act otherwise. By this, I would say that there's one important date that has to be mentioned also in the 60s, which I would like to emphasize because it happened to be the 11th of April, 1965. And as we approach to the to April the 11th, and it's around anniversary, I would like to mention that at that day, TMT, the Turkish Cypriot Terrorist Organization, assassinated a member of the Central Committee of AKEL, a Turkish Cypriot, Derviş Ali Kavazoglu, and Kostas Michaoulis, a Greek Cypriot, a member of the Provincial Committee of AKEL and a trade unionist, as they were going on their way to Larnaca to work, do party work within the Turkish Cypriot community, because the main aim of AKEL was not to allow the division, the splitting of the two communities.
And was this the location that I was taken to by AKEL when I visited Cyprus, and they have like a memorial to these martyrs, to these comrades, correct?
Yes. So this was as these days approach. Unfortunately, on Sunday we were going to hold this commemoration, but we could not do it. It's an annual commemoration, but because of the situation and the lockdown, we were not able to do it. Our youth organization launched a small video on their website and Facebook, where you can see the marches in the last 10 years and how we do it, how we commemorate that. So Rapprochement, this is the movement of Rapprochement, of bringing together the two communities, is something that goes all along the history of AKEL, as it's always been the party of all Cypriots. And in the times when there was this the rise of chauvinism and nationalism and trying to divide the two and put the Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots to fight because they are Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots, we launched this slogan or this movement of Rapprochement. Especially after 1974, but I mean, I left back the part of 1974, which is the darkest period in our contemporary history of Cyprus, because just 14 years after its independence, the terrorist organization EOKA B, as it was called, the founder of this was Grivas. Those of you that know the history of Greece during the Second World War and the fascist organization HE, who were collaborators to the with the Hitlerites and the German occupation forces in Greece. He was a Cypriot. He came to Cyprus. He founded this organization because he was against Makarios. Because he was, his philosophy back in the 50s, and he never gave up this philosophy, was to unite Cyprus to Greece. And of course, this would mean to divide Cyprus between Greece and Turkey. This, you remember that in 1967, it was the Greek dictatorship. The black colonels in Greece, Greece being a NATO country, were of course obeying to everything that the NATO was saying. And there was this plan of NATO that was decided in In Lisbon in 1972, it was called Aphrodite, and it had this double side, two prongs, let's say. One was to organize a coup d'etat to overthrow Makarios and the Digel, the democratically elected government in Cyprus, that would give the pretext to Turkey, using the Treaty of Guarantee, to invade Cyprus. And this is
Turkey,
what happened.
Was Turkey a member of NATO at this point?
Of course, yes, of course. Yeah. Both Greece
against the capitalist alliance against the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc, of course.
Yes, because you always have to have in mind the geography and where these countries are and where Cyprus is. So they wanted to use Cyprus for their own means. That is a launching pad against the whole of the Middle East. Remember, at that time it was the different wars, it was the Suez Canal, it was the price of oil, the Soviet Union, the role of the Soviet Union, and of course Cyprus was very, very important to them. And having a president like Makarios, who was in the non-aligned movement, who was more a patriot than anything else, he didn't want his country to be used in this way, and having a strong party, AKEL, that at that time counted like 40% of the vote, was very, very difficult for them to accept. And that's why this the coup d'etat and the Turkish invasion happened.
Well, that's very complex to me, you know, from an outsider, because now I'm thinking, you know, you were a British colony, and before that, you know, you had lots of other occupiers, invaders. So now the northern half of the island is controlled by Turkey, and many parts of the southern part of the island, the Greek part of the island, is still controlled by the British. So in many ways, Cyprus is not a unified country, but it's also an occupied country by two different members of NATO, two different imperialists.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it like that. The result of the Turkish invasion, Turkey invaded from the north, and they moved on to occupy 37% of the island, the northern part of the island. They exercised ethnic cleansing. At that time, Cyprus had about 600,000. The population was about 600,000 Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots that were living scattered all over Cyprus. So what they did was, by this violence and raping and the threats that were put on the population, the bombing and all that, Cyprus didn't have any any weapons against that. And besides, it was betrayed by the Greek junta. So there was nothing here. Just the courage of very few of those people that were not leading the army, because the army was led by this group. So it was like big sacrifice of a lot of Cypriot patriots, Democrats, who fought against the coup d'etat, and then they fought against the Turkish invasion. I have to tell you that our youth organization and our party lost a lot of members, disproportionate. So they used the ethnic cleansing, and we had 1/3 of the population of Cyprus was made refugees, displaced in their own country. Both Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots. Because there was later on, a few months later, in 1975, there was an agreement, listen to that, to have an exchange of population. So it wasn't really exchange, it was not called exchange, but Turkey insisted that the Turkish Cypriots were moved from the southern part, from the free areas, into the occupied areas. From that point, from that moment on, the people was artificially divided.
Interesting.
This was never the case before.
And from what point in history, because I'm thinking of when I was in Cyprus and I had, you know, I developed relationships with many members of the youth organization, Edon, a lot of them would hang out with us and interact with us wearing military uniform and, you know, men. And they were explaining to us that it is mandatory from a certain point in history, you know, after the Turkish invasion, that men in the free zone, where most of the Greek Cypriots live, that they serve in the military as a way of defense. And so I imagine that also gives a lot of influence of Akel in the military as well, correct?
The National Guard, as it's called, because by constitution, you cannot have an army as such. So it's called the National Guard. It was founded after 1964, after 1964, when there was the first clashes and the first bombings by Turkey of Cyprus. So, and that was conscripts. I mean, it's obligatory. At that time, it was for 24 months from the age of 18. Nowadays, it's 13 months from the age of 18. It's obligatory. And it is because we have an occupation. But I wouldn't say that we really have an influence in that, because it's the Ministry of Defense that leads that guides or that controls the army, and the top officers are some of them until today Greeks from Greece, and some others are Cypriots, but I wouldn't say that we have particular. It's just it's obligatory, so the young kids have to go and serve for 13 months nowadays. So going back to the invasion, which was a very, very difficult time, a lot of people lost their lives from both communities. As I said, there was this ethnic cleansing. Refugees that remain until today, refugees. But we have missing persons. And this is something that is not so much known. You know, like, you know about the missing persons in Argentina, in Chile, in Guatemala, which is closer to what you would know. But in Cyprus, there were 2,000 missing persons, some from 1963-64, and most from 1974. And it was not just people that were killed during the battles and then were left behind the lines. It's mostly people that were captured and assassinated, killed. A lot were thrown down wells, massacred. There were very, very ugly stories from both sides. And it's atrocities that happened. There were 1,600 Greek Cypriots and 450 Turkish Cypriots. To this day, there is a process going on from 2005 onwards. It's called the Committee of Missing Persons of Cyprus. There is one person from the international community, from the Red Cross, a Greek Cypriot and a Turkish Cypriot that sit on this committee. And there is an anthropological laboratory. They do a lot of exhumations and DNA tests, you know, all these processes. And I have to say that we have to give credit to the Argentinian team, because they are the ones that came first here to train our specialists. And the aim was to make it completely Cypriot-owned. And this is a Cypriot-owned project. Young people of all specialties that are involved in this process, Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots, that work together. and they perform this very humanitarian task because every family wants to take to have back and give the necessary honor to their loved ones. Unfortunately, it's becoming more and more difficult because time passes. It's 46 years since, and people for that knew or saw or had witnesses are passing away, and there are still about 800 to be found.
Wow.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that because then you would understand better what we have to face when we are solving the Cyprus problem. As I said, the point of rapprochement, this of bringing the two communities together, is very, very central for us. And right after 1974, right after all these atrocities and these difficulties, Dimitris Christofias, whom you mentioned, who later on became the president of the Republic of Cyprus, was in the leadership of our youth organization, EDON, and he launched this slogan, "The Turks of Cyprus are not our enemies, the Turks of Cyprus are our brothers." And we were called traitors. I mean, I was there when this happened. I was very young, but I was there when it happened. And this is how we, members of AGEL, our youth organization, were brought up. We are being brought up by saying, our Cyprus has to be reunified. Our people has to be reunified. And how do we do that? We do that, for us, the solution is to have a bi-zonal, bi-communal federation. This is an agreement between the two leaders back in 1977 and 1979. Through the UN resolutions, all the UN resolutions have that, all the reports of the UN Secretary General have that, and the negotiations are under the auspices of the UN. It's the good services of the UN Secretary General. And we insist on that. We don't want this framework to go. We don't want to take it into any other framework for a solution. We want the solution to be on the basis of international law. I know there is a lot of talk about, oh, there's no international law any longer, et cetera, et cetera. We insist. We don't give up. Because small peoples like us, like the Palestinian people that hasn't got, weapons and it's under occupation all these years, the longest occupation ever, we don't have any other arms. We don't have any other weapons. For us, is the international law, is the UN framework, the charter of the UN. Because there you have all that.
Yes,
it's against occupation.
I'm sitting here listening to, this story. I'm reminded of when I was in Cyprus, some of the other comrades around me from different countries would ask AKEL members or EDON members, well, you guys have had, state power, you've had a president, but why didn't you have socialism? And the answer was always, how can you establish socialism if your country is not united? How yes. can you, move forward as a nation that's not united? And to me, it's a shame that we hear about, Israel-Palestine, this occupation. We hear about countries that are divided like Sudan. You have Sudan and South Sudan and North Korea, South Korea, DPRK, Republic of Korea. But we don't hear about Cyprus. And I wonder, obviously it's because there are, imperialist members of NATO involved. But it's in such a key pivotal point geographically, right there next to Palestine. And I wonder how some of these realities in terms of occupation and the struggle for liberation overlap between the Cypriots and the Palestinians.
Yeah, I'll get to that. By saying all that and describing all that, and why is Cyprus a victim of this occupation, and why do we have NATO so interested And why do we have these imperialist forces so much interested about Cyprus? And why doesn't Turkey just obey to the international law? You know, it wants to impose international law supposedly and rights on others, but never on its own. And why is the British still having the so-called British sovereign bases in Cyprus, you know, after all these years? So for us, the solution can only come if together Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots agree on a solution. And the way to do it is through a common struggle. And this is something that we are building, a common struggle between Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots. And just to conclude about the kind of solution that we want, the bi-zonal, bi-communal federation, is that we have to add what we call the three singles: the single international personality, single citizenship, and single sovereignty. That is one state. Having a federal formation, you in the US, you understand this, what it means, but it has to be one state. Where all the citizens, irrespective of their religious background, national background, would be equal and share the same human rights and the same civil rights, which are very, very important for us in our work. Now, why do we see that the imperialists want Cyprus and the bases and the unsinkable aircraft carrier, as you said at the beginning? You see, they use Cyprus to bomb Syria. They use Cyprus to bomb Iraq. They wanted to use Cyprus to bomb Libya. But at that time, Comrade Christofias was the president of the Republic and he did not allow it. And they want to control and support some of their allies in the areas, Israel. Unfortunately, you know, the Republic of the government, the current government of the Republic of Cyprus has become signed up into the PESCO, which is the permanent structured cooperation of certain members of the EU, of the European Union. And this makes, we are the only party that is against it. And this is the plan of militarization of the EU. And by the way, it's giving money to armaments and to military missions instead of health. And we see the disaster that is happening now because of that, that when not enough resources were given, or rather were taken away from the public health and education, in this case, public health. So we, with the Palestinians, we live in the same region. Israel is an ally of the US. Or the US is an ally of Israel. I don't know how to put it better, because I don't know who controls whom in this case. Trump has recognized, I don't know who gives him this right, the Israeli sovereignty over the Syrian Golan Heights, an occupied territory, has recognized Jerusalem as the undivided capital of Israel. Who gave him that right? Against international law, against all UN resolutions. And he recognized so-called the legality of the settlements and the right of Israel to annex more Palestinian territory into Israel. And this is the hand of imperialism and the imperialist plans for the region. And we see that all these interventions have caused so much pain and so much disaster in the area. Libya, Syria, I'm not talking about Palestine, Iraq, what's happening in Afghanistan today, up to this day, Yemen. I mean, people choose not to talk about this, but this is what is happening. So many people have lost their lives. And, you know, you don't see it from where you are, but we who are very near Syria and Lebanon, it's just 90 kilometers. People get on boats to come to Cyprus to, you know, just to survive. And they, fortunately, between there and Cyprus, there were no people drowning, as far as we know. It's mainly between Greece and Turkey that they get the small dinghies that to cross, and they drown there. But we have a lot of refugees, Syrian refugees, in Cyprus. It's a huge number in comparison to the population, to the Cypriot population, and the European Union's member states don't want to take, you know, refugees. They caused this war in a way. And they don't want to take in the refugees. And it's the same drama that is happening in Greece, in Italy, and partially also in Spain. But mostly it's at this time, the drama is taking place around us.
Well, you know, that's another beautiful aspect, I think, of your country in terms of its welcoming nature. You know, when I was in Nicosia or Limassol or Larnaca, wherever I was, I saw these immigrants from Syria, Iraq, you know, Palestine, Philippines even, you know, they're everywhere. They have businesses and they're very friendly and they feel very welcomed, you know, and I didn't see, I'm sure it's present, you know, nothing's perfect in terms of discrimination, but they felt very safe, I felt, you know, they would communicate with us, we would talk about politics and their country and Cyprus, and they seem to have a very positive, not only perspective of Cyprus, but also of Akel, you know, because when we were, you know, we were being showed around by members of Akel and the Edon. And so I was thinking, in light of what just happened here in the United States, in terms of Bernie dropping out of the presidential race, you know, he, for many people in this country, he was the beacon of light for the progressive and socialist movement. And of course, our party, who, you know, we were sympathetic and supportive of a lot of his policies, we always say, you know, we don't endorse candidates who are not members of our party, but, you know, we support their policies. And, you know, we really feel that a movement for socialism has to be built around issues and not individuals. And, you know, in your country, Akel has been able to even elect a president. There has been a communist president in Cyprus, you know, this member of the European Union. And so for all of the, especially the American listeners, you know, tuning into this episode, they would be really interested, I think, in hearing how your party was able to win such a significant victory, you know, not only for the working people of Cyprus, but for, you know, the international communist movement. This is very significant.
Yes, indeed. We look forward to see what's going to happen next with the elections in your country, and whether or not in this in the midst of this pandemic, the elections will take place this year. Yes, we as a party, we were never a party of big theories. We were a party of practice, of developing Marxism and Leninism through practice, and on the basis of our conditions. It was very, very important because in Cyprus, for example, we have a lot of people who are quite religious. Akel never came out to say, if you want to become a part member of Akel, you have to be an atheist. We never had such a policy. It was irrelevant for us. For us, the relevance was, do you believe in the strength of the people? Do you want the labor rights, the civil rights? Do you want the progress of your country? Are you for the common to liberate Cyprus from the British, to struggle together with the Turkish Cypriots. This is what is most important for us. Are you an internationalist? Do you want to be in solidarity with other people, with the Palestinians, with the Syrian refugees, you know, with Cuba, with Latin America, with South Africa, you know, Vietnam at that time? I mean, this was always the important criteria for somebody to become a member of AGEP. So there was never this conflict and a way of isolating AGEP as the non-religious, you know? It was not the concept. Many even said, you're not really communist, you know? the understanding is different. AGEP all through its history, and I've tried to explain how it really is a party rooted in the people. All through the years, all struggles had the stamp of AGEP. Like in the labor movement, because after the strikes of 1948, the labor movement in Cyprus, which was mainly our union and not the strike breakers, it was the 8 hours. And many other rights, social security since 1948, healthcare since 1948, which we have managed to safeguard through very, very difficult conditions. Imagine going through a war, through the division, through the invasion and occupation, and then the economic crisis of 2013. Because in Cyprus we had a bail-in. We are the only country in the world that they had a bail-in and not a bail-out. And the memoranda and all that. We, though, managed to safeguard this for the working people. It's not enough. We have to enlarge that to gain more. But we have managed to stop the privatization of the public sector. Because the right wing, the neoliberals, wanted to privatize health, wanted to privatize the electricity board, the water board, everything. They have managed to privatize parts, but not the main ones. The ports, part of the ports but, and airports, but not the electricity, not the telecommunications, not the water, and not the health. I mean, there is the private sector. But the health sector is, since last year, we have started the national health scheme, although it has a lot of problems, and we can come back to that. Why I'm saying that? I'm saying all that for you to understand how we built the strength, because you cannot come to power in day one like that. You wake up and you say, I'm going to be a candidate, I'm going to walk, we have a candidate and we're going to win the elections. Mm-hmm. AGEP never put a candidate for the presidential elections. It's a presidential system in Cyprus. So it's the president that nominates his cabinet, the ministers. And the parliamentary elections are quite different. And they don't happen at the same year. And you don't have to have a parliamentary majority to have a government. So it's different. It's two different things. And by the way, since we're talking about that, let me say that we have 16 out of the 56 members of parliament. It's called the House of Representatives. So we have one third, roughly. We have about 27%, 28. We have seen much higher percentages. Now we are around that percent. We have 2 members out of the 6 members of the European Parliament that Cyprus has. We have mayors, we have members of the municipal councils, etc. So we never put forward a presidential candidate. We worked with others. As long as Makarios was alive, we were supporting Makarios. Then we supported Spiros Kyprianou from the Democratic Party. In 1988, we supported an independent candidate, Yorgos Vasiliou, who became president. And that was the first time that we had two comrades, close to the party who became ministers. But Akel as such was not represented in the government. Okay, we had this, we were supporting the government. Then we had 10 years of the right-wing party in government until 2003, when we supported another candidate from the Democratic Party, Tasos Papadopoulos, who became president. And there we had four members of his government who were from Akel already. That was the first time that we had, we were saying Akel is in government with four members. But we departed from the government, we left that government because we disagreed on the Cyprus problem. During that period, we had the Annan plan and the referenda for the solution of the Cyprus problem that we had disagreements on. The referendum was the plan had a lot of problems. That's another conversation. And we left that government. And it was during that period that we said we have to put forward our candidate. But by then, Comrade Christofias, who was our general secretary from 88 to 2009, was a member of parliament from 91 onwards. And in 2001, he was elected for the first time ever. We had a communist who was the president of the House of Representatives and very popular. He commanded a popularity of around 75%. He was the most popular leader. And again, was very strong at that time. We had reached percentages of 34%. In 2007, the party decided in a special conference that Dimitris Christofias would be, for the first time ever, Akel's own candidate. And by uniting forces, because this has always been our work, how to work with others, how to form alliances, how to forge fronts on issues, as you said. Because obviously, we are communists, we cannot agree on many things, but there are things that you can agree, like basic rights, basic civil rights, the freedom of Cyprus, which is basic for us. So through all these years of struggle, we managed to have Dimitris Christofias elected in the second round with a very, very good percentage, because you need 50% anyway, so it was, if I remember correctly, 53 or 56%.
I think 53%.
Yeah. It wasn't an easy time, both in Cyprus, in the world, and in the European Union. As you said very rightly, he was the only communist and first, and only, and since then, nobody else, communist president who had to sit with the 28 members of the member states of the European Union in the European Council. But he did quite well, because he was ready to work on the issues that one could work with. And he always had Cyprus in mind. And he was saying, we have to do everything for the good of Cyprus. And that's why Akel had changed his position in 95, because we were against Cyprus joining the EU and decided to vote in favor of Cyprus joining the EU. Because that was what the Turkish Cypriots also felt that would give a security roof for a federal Cyprus.
Go ahead. I was just gonna say it. We really admire the non-sectarian approach to the class struggle that Akel has in Cyprus. Just because we also believe that, you know, you have to unite the working class before you can talk about revolution or socialism. And so,
exactly.
You know, and it's also that in the case of non-sectarian, you know, working with others, looking for unity before all else, it's that your party also plays a significant role in the European Parliament, right? In the Party of the European Left, I believe it's called.
No, the Party of the European Left is on a European, it's a party. It's not in the European Parliament. There we are observers. We're not members for different reasons. But we are in the European Parliament. We are members of the GUE-NGL, of the United European Left, Nordic Green Left. We have been associated since 1996, when Cyprus became a candidate to the EU. We were associated with this group and we have worked as associated members, observers, and later on, when in 2004 onwards, since we are members of the European Union and we have two members in the European Parliament since that time. We are members of that group. And there we try to forge unity, yes, on issues. And of course, to make sure that they understand the Cyprus problem and that they support Cyprus and our position for the reunification of Cyprus. So for us, all struggles have to go on two levels. The national one, that is, to solve the national problem, which is the reunification, do away with the occupation, eventually do away with the British bases, and unite our island. And then, of course, on the other hand, to gain all the progressive demands of the working people of Cyprus, of the united class, working class of Cyprus. And that's why one of the greatest contribution of the late Comrade Christofias, because unfortunately we lost him last year, during the 5 years of his presidency, 2008 to 2013, was all the work that was done for the solution of the Cyprus problem. This is an immense work that was done. And it's on these that we hope that we will eventually manage to solve the Cyprus problem.
Yeah.
But these years.
Go ahead.
These 5 years of his being in presidency were very hard years. The right wing tried to do a constitutional coup. That and to criminalize politics, that you have later on seen in Paraguay, in Honduras, in Brazil, in Ecuador today, you know, today, exactly today, they have condemned Rafael Correa and Jorge Glass to 8 years imprisonment. Of course, Correa is not, fortunately, not in Ecuador. But I mean, this is the same policies, and the policies of politics of the U.S. towards Cyprus have all through the years and also during those 5 years of Dimitris Christofias never stopped. You know, the end of not allowing the free development of Cyprus. And the solution that we want. And since the last year, we have been living through what was called the Rubio Menendez bill, and now it is law enacted on the Eastern Mediterranean. And the aim is to do away with any Russian presence in the area and control Cyprus fully, militarily and politically by the US. And it's for the first time in its history that Cyprus is now, instead of aligning itself mainly with the EU, is aligning itself more and more with the US. And we are highly critical of that. We had exposed it completely because here it was presented as, you know, they are friends of Cyprus and they want to sell weapons to Cyprus and all that. To lift the embargo of sales of weapons to Cyprus. So there's a lot to talk about.
Yes, but it's very, you know, this is significant now that the U.S. is playing like a more direct role in the imperialism of the region. And it's making me think of when I myself marched to the northern occupied border of Cyprus with the son of Demetrios Christofias, Demetrios, who was the elected communist who passed away last summer, his son, who is Christos Christofias, who's the leader of the Youth League, Edon. But we marched there, we protested, and it was so impactful on me to see the NATO soldiers on the other side. You know, many of them Turkish, of course. They're there to prevent a civil war, of course. But I think that, you know, for many of our listeners listening in, I think this is very insightful and enlightening in terms of understanding what struggle really is in the world communist movement across the globe, not only for, you know, uniting the working class, but also in combating imperialism. Because we have many folks here on the left here in the United States who are not really members of any organization because they feel that it's revolution or nothing. You know, it's they read Mao, you know, the barrel of a gun, and they think it's revolution or nothing. And so this is really enlightening for a lot of our members. Before we go, since we are running out of time, I did want to ask you, is there anything you would ask of the American listeners or any listeners at this point of how we can express solidarity with the Cypriot people in support of Akel and in support of unification against imperialism?
I think the most important thing would be to know that Cyprus has to fight and to struggle for its reunification and for a just solution for the reunification of its people and of the people and the country within the framework of international law and the UN. Hence, any moves by the US to take the to impose a solution or to take Cyprus into a military solution of or through becoming member of NATO or of the Partnership for Peace of NATO or of becoming the whole island a NATO basis, you have to stand up against it. Because we don't have the weapons to do that. if need be, we will defend our country, of course. But it all starts from opposing this kind of policies. I mean, standing up against these Rubio and Menendez policies for the region, standing up against the militarization of international relations, because we have to go back into diplomatic solutions, into political solutions, peaceful solutions, and not military solutions. And there's the, I mean, our climate, our planet is being destroyed. Climate change is all over us. We've seen now with the pandemic, which we need each other and we need our planet and we need to be healthy. Otherwise, there's no future to anyone. And so we have to forget about, stealing and controlling all energy resources. And by the way, we have found in 2010 the first natural gas resources in the exclusive economic zone of Cyprus. And that's why Turkey is even more aggressive nowadays and is drilling in our exclusive economic zone. And nobody is defending us, you know, against Turkey. We have to accept, everybody has to accept that this planet belongs to all of us, that the resources should belong to all of us, that all the peoples have the right to develop and to make use of these resources for their own development, social and economic. And we have to fight together against the climate change. And not say there's no climate change. I would call on those that are on our listeners, whenever possible, to remember that we are going through this struggle as well. Although fortunately there are not people being killed here, like in other countries, for example, in Palestine on a daily basis. But we still have this occupation and NATO presence inside.
Well, thank you very much, Vera. And we appreciate, you know, your presence here on the show today. I think we've all learned something. And we want you and your party and all of the Cypriot people to know that we stand with them in solidarity and that you have our support and that we appreciate your support and solidarity, you know, from your end. And in conclusion, if anyone listening is interested in visiting the English page of the Progressive Party of Working People, they can visit akel.org.cy. That's akel.org.cy. They can also visit the Facebook page of Akel International and the Instagram and Twitter names, which are both at Akel1926. That's at Akel1926. We thank you very much, Vera, and we wish you and your comrades and all the Cypriot people a very safe lockdown, and we hope to see you soon.
Same to you, and all the very best to the CPUSA on the 100th anniversary.
Thank you very much.